the meeting of Port Malabar Holiday Park, Mobile Home Park Recreation District, 15th day of January. Invocation, Keith?
We all stand, please. Heavenly Father, we come to you asking guidance, wisdom, and support for this meeting. We pray for the health and the well-being of residents and employees of this community, their families, friends, whether here or traveling. Also ask to guide our elected officials to use wisdom in their decision-making and protect our military and first responders. Use your grace to heal the health, to heal the sick and the suffering. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I will ask the secretary to take roll.
Terry Steimer.
Here.
Joe Prisco.
Here.
Jack Emmerich.
Here.
Joanne Gagan is here. Gaston Pelletier.
Here.
Keith Richer.
Here.
Barbara Whitnick.
Here.
Michael Hamm.
Here.
The records will reflect that Cherie Morris, district manager, is also present, along with Carl Bone, district attorney. District's attorney. Apostrophe S.
We'll call on Joanne to read the oath.
At the reorganizational meeting, Terry Steimer, who was nominated to be chairperson, was not here to be sworn in, so we will swear him in now, and then the gavel will be passed from Jack Emmerich to Terry. So Terry, if you'll stand, raise your right hand. Okay.
I do solemnly swear
that I will support,
protect and defend,
the Constitution and government of the United States, and of the state of Florida, that I am duly qualified to hold, office
Constitution of the United States.
And that I will well, and faithfully,
perform
the duties of, trustee of the Board of Trustees, of the Port Malabar,
Holiday Park,
Mobile Home Park,
Recreation District,
on which I am now about to enter. So help me God.
Congratulations. Thank you. Does everybody hear that?
I heard that.
It's not a hammer.
It woke everybody up.
So, this is a special meeting. This is not a regular meeting. Therefore, there won't be any old minutes, new minutes, none of that stuff. This is just relative to Mr. Carl Bone being here, the attorney. So it's only going to constitute an question and answer session. That's all we're going to deal with today. After that's done, we'll adjourn and see you on the 27th. At this point in time, here's the way it's going to go. I'm going to get Mr. Bone to read and give us a synopsis on some questions that were sent to him in advance. After he's done with that, I will go to the board to see if they have any questions for Mr. Bone. After that's done, we'll open it up to the floor, the rest of you residents. You'll get one question at a time, a 3-minute time limit. You have to come to the front microphone, give your name and address. And then if you have more than one question, as everybody's had a chance to ask a question, we'll get back to it. Now, Mr. Bone may or may not answer every question. Some questions are probably not, he is not responsible for. That maybe the board is, and There's no need for him to answer that question. So if you like, Mr. Bone, if you're ready.
As ready as I'm going to be.
We'll proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Congratulations, members of the board and members of the district. I'm Carl Bone. I am the district attorney. I have been the district attorney on and off for quite some time, and as boards change, things change, and so it's not unusual for the transition to go back and forth over years. However, I've been with the district probably going back to the early 90s, so I'm familiar with special districts, and as you are aware, another similar facility is Barefoot Bay on a very much larger scale than we have here in Holiday Park. Anyhow, I was sent a series of 14 questions to which I provided written answers to in the form of a memo to the board. And what I'd like to do is go over those questions and kind of give the Reader's Digest version of my answers. Some of them answers are long-winded, as only lawyers could be, and you know, may very well provide more confusion if I read the entire answer than explanation. I'm going to jump at the request of one of the board members to question number 8 and 9. First question is, does Holiday Park have the legal right to impose a monetary fine? Now, Holiday Park, as I said, is a special district created pursuant to Chapter 418 of the Florida statutes. And you are a governmental body, okay? So, certain governmental regulations, restrictions, procedures, and policies do apply to Holiday Park. One of the things that does not apply to a special district is the procedure for code enforcement under Chapter 162 of the Florida statutes. In fact, my predecessor in the probably late 80s made a request to the Attorney General to see if Holiday Park could use the code enforcement process under Chapter 162. And the Attorney General said, no, you're not a municipality, you can't use that. So what happened was the determination was that we could use our DORs, the deed of restrictions, as I'll refer to them as the mechanism to establish a fining process. And over the years, that has been what was done and finally memorialized in the amended and restated Declaration of Restrictions that was done earlier, mid-2000s, 2014, 15, in that period. So what we had done was set up a procedural mechanism to establish fines for certain violations of the DORs. And that fining process is designed to provide due process to the alleged violator. Multiple notices to cure, failing which it comes back for a hearing, a public hearing, at which time a fine can be imposed. So to answer the question, in my opinion, yes, you have the right to impose fines under the DORs. Now the next question was, can Holiday Park change or modify the violation procedure? And the answer is yes, it can, but that would require an amendment to the Declaration of Restrictions or the DORs. So yes, you can fine, and yes, the process can be changed. The only suggestion I would have is if the process is changed and you still want to keep fines in play, you still have to afford due process to the violator notice and an opportunity to be heard regarding that fine, okay? So those were the two questions I was asked to attack first, and there they are. Now, the next question, which is the first question in the series of questions, has been a thorn in the side of Holiday Park for quite some time, and it involves taxes, the non-payment of taxes. The question is, under what authority did the city of Palm Bay come in the park and acquire several homes, and what is happening with them? What happens is this. Your assessments are contained on the tax bill. You all see it when you get your tax bill, and there's what's called ad valorem taxes. Those are taxes that specifically relate to a calculation concerning the real property. Then there's what's called the non-ad valorem taxes, and that's what yours is. It's a non-ad valorem assessment. You might see things like the mosquito control district assessment and other assessments like that. Those are called non-ad valorem assessments. So, Holiday Park's assessment appears below the line in the non-ad valorem, and the bill goes out. People don't pay their tax bill. What happens then? After notice to these people that they're delinquent, the tax collector will provide for the issuance of tax certificates. So if someone didn't pay their 2016 tax bill, a tax certificate is available for purchase to anybody out in the public. And what happens is the person who purchases the certificate pays the face value of the tax, and if someone wants to redeem that certificate, make the taxes current, they will have to pay that face value plus accrued interest. Okay? Now, again, if a tax certificate is issued and purchased and no one redeems the taxes, then that person who owns and holds the certificate can apply for a tax deed, which means that they go through a process and the county issues a deed to that person, and that person now owns the property. What's happening here in Holiday Park, especially on these seven or eight certificates that are owned by Palm Bay, people are not buying the certificates. They're just laying there stagnant. So what happens under the statute, which is under Chapter 197 of the Florida statutes, that after a period of time, if that certificate is not purchased, a deed from the tax collector, the taxing authority here, is issued to the county. Now the county owns it, okay, free and clear. Because Holiday Park is located within the municipal corporate limits of the city of Palm Bay, the statute provides another step whereby after the county holds that deed for a period of time, they give it to the city of Palm Bay. That's how Palm Bay has acquired title to these lots. Okay? Now, is the city of Palm Bay responsible for taxes? No, because they're a municipal government or local government, and they are exempt under Florida law from paying real estate taxes. Is the city of Palm Bay exempt from complying with our DORs regarding maintenance and stuff like that? No. They have now the maintenance responsibility and the obligation to maintain those premises. So that's how the city of Palm Bay got title to these parcels, okay, because nobody bought the certificates and they just laid there stagnant. You know, as an aside, tax certificates are bought by people for investment purposes. They buy them and hoping that they gain some interest and then they're redeemed, okay? A lot of people don't necessarily want to go to the tax deed scenario because now they own it and now they're obligated for all the future taxes and maintenance. So they do it as a as an investment tool. So again, my answer is long-winded, but that is how the city of Palm Bay has obtained title to these properties. Now, in my discussions with Cherie, you know, we can approach Palm Bay and say, okay, guys, what will it take to get these in our name? And that kind of answers the next question somewhat. Can Holiday Park purchase the abandoned homes in the community? The answer is yes. There's two ways I think you can do that. Number one is get the city to convey title to you. Another way, and I'm familiar that Barefoot Bay has a process in place where if we know that we can contact an owner of the property, nothing prevents you from going to that person and say, we'll buy it from you, we'll take it off your hands. Now, of course, you do that at a significantly reduced price and whatnot, and then you, you know, rehabilitate it and sell it. But, you know, and Sherry, I learned that this morning in talking to Cliff Repperger, the attorney for Barefoot Bay. They have that process in place, and that's something we may want to look at to see how they obtain title from owners of distressed property. And again, that only works if we know who and where the owner is. Some of these are probably the result of a death, and they're just laying there idle, or some of them are just, they just walked away. So, you know, that's an approach we can take, as well as seeing if Palm Bay is willing to negotiate with us so we can get those 7 or 8 homes that they have title to. Another thought I had was if we can avoid getting to the point where it's given to Palm Bay by getting into an interlocal agreement with the tax collector, the city, and us, whereby we bypass all that. And if it ever happens where a certificate is not purchased and it's ripe to be conveyed, we can get it. But that's, you know, that's a negotiation with the city and the tax collector. And, you know, that's just another available remedy we have. But again, to answer the question simply, yes, the Port Malabar Holiday Park Mobile Home Park Recreation District has the right to purchase those properties, whether it's through the tax certificate, whether it's through an arm's length transaction with the owner, or whether it's through an interlocal agreement. Along that, how can Holiday Park collect delinquent taxes? Well, Holiday Park is not the taxing entity. The tax collector issues the tax bill, so they're the ones that collect it. We could, if we wanted to, and I do not recommend this, try and take our assessment off the bill and try to do the tax collecting on our own. That's going to mean, yeah, exactly, no, I agree. What that's going to mean is that you're going to have to hire more staff, you're going to have to change your computers, you're going to have to be able to, you know, mail out, how many residents do we have here? You know, it's an expense that I don't think you want to incur. For the nominal amount we pay to the tax collector to process this, it's worth it to use that process. Another interesting question, can residents receive internet service instead of basic cable TV? I didn't necessarily understand the question, but if your cable TV right now is part of your assessment, then, and it's payable through the tax bill, the only way you're going to be able to do that is to change your governing documents to allow that to happen.
The DORs.
Correct, the DORs. If I say governing documents, I mean the DORs, and I'll use the term DORs as much as I remember to do so. Does the fine system have to be in our deed restrictions to be in effect? Yes. That's, I pretty much answered that question, but the answer is yes. In order to do the fines, it has to be in your documents. Because you have no other mechanism under the law to impose fines. Because as I said, the code enforcement process, which could result in a fine, does not apply and cannot be used by a special district. Another question is Holiday Park allowed to invest their money in anything besides a savings and checking account? Could we put the money in a ladder account? And I answered the question that governmental bodies are restricted in how they invest their money, and to check with the auditor. The auditor did get back to us and provided a copy of Chapter 218 of the Florida statute, which lists basically four authorized investment processes that a local government or a special district can use. They can invest in the local government surplus funds trust fund. They can invest in Securities and Exchange Commission registered money market funds with the highest credit quality rating from a nationally recognized rating agency. They can put it in interest-bearing time deposits or savings accounts at qualified public depositories, or direct obligations of the U.S. security, of the U.S. Treasury. So if you wanted to invest, it would have to be in one of those types of funds. And if the ladder account, L-A-D-D-E-R, account is one of those, then yes, it could be done. But again, statutorily, we're restricted as to how we can invest our funds. Because remember, it's public funds. And you don't want to take any high-risk investments at the risk of that happening. Because, you know, the board, as well as, you know, every member of the district administration has a fiduciary responsibility to you all. Okay? this next question I've been dealing with for the 30 years I've been a municipal attorney, okay? With all the problems of the Sunshine Law creates, would the park be wise to consider other options for governing the park? That's a decision you all have to make. Do you want to be a governmental body subject to the Sunshine Law and the public records law and all the other laws that relate to public entities? Or do you want to, which I don't recommend, disband it and become a private association? It creates fundamental problems if you wanted to do that. Number one, that unless 100% want to go private, those who dissent would probably not be bound by any of the private restrictions. Number two, how do you get title to all these recreational amenities? You're going to have to go through the city of Palm Bay, because they're your sponsor. Basically, they authorize the creation of the district within its municipal corporate boundaries, and there's a whole lot of processes that have to go through there in order to disqualify as a special district. So I think the process is more arduous, expensive, and creates a logistical problem if you wanted to go to be a private entity. Can management have vehicles towed from the storage compound, parking lot, or green spaces? Governing documents should have that provision in it, and tow-away signs need to be posted. And if those are complied with, then the answer is yes. About this next question, about trustees, are there requirements advertised to be eligible to be accepted to serve on the board? Should the candidates share their experience with the residents? The only qualifications for candidacy on a special district board is that they have to be a qualified elector of the district and present a petition signed by the applicant and not fewer than 25 other electors of the district to qualify as a candidate. That's it. Okay? You cannot impose any other additional requirements to qualify as a candidate. Now, if you wanted to get a candidate and or other candidates to tell you how good they are, hold what they call a town hall forum, candidate forum. Make them tell you who they are, what they're about. If they don't show up, well then, you know, maybe they're not that interested. So that's what I would do. There's no legal requirement that, you know, they submit a resume or share in writing their experience. I'd hold a candidate form. That's what I would do. Let's see. Am I familiar with the Markville Record Title Act? Yes, I am. And as I said in my memo, the MARTA, we call it MARTA, Marketable Record Title Act, does not apply to government. Okay? What MARTA basically says is that something in the root of title, which is older than 30 years, that hasn't been revived, is extinguished. So, you know, I know there's a concern about your DORs, you know, will they be extinguished after 30 years? My opinion, no. Number one, you're a governmental body. Number two, an exception provided for in the in MARTA is that if the thing we're looking at, your deed of restrictions, is referenced back in the plat for Holiday Park, and in your case, it is. Your DORs are referenced on the plat of Holiday Park by record book and page. In those instances, every time a deed is issued and it says, according to the plat thereof, you'll see that in every time a deed is issued, it prevents the DORs from being subject to any type of extinguishment under MARTA. So, again, I don't think MARTA applies to governmental entities. Even if it did, which the case law says it doesn't, the exception under MARTA protects the integrity and the duration and the life of your DORs. Okay. Well, there was a question here, and attached was an attorney general opinion. It said, would you clarify the opinion of the then attorney general relative to Sunshine Law? The opinion that was attached was an informal opinion. And there was a question as to whether or not private entities are governed by the Sunshine Law. Well, first and foremost, Port Malabar Holiday Park, Mobile Home Park Recreation District is not a private entity. It is a public entity. So regardless of what that opinion says, this board is bound by the Sunshine Law. But what the opinion goes on to say, and if a private entity is actually functioning on behalf of the government, then it's subject to the Sunshine Law. For instance, some jails in the state of Florida are privately run, but jails are a product of statute given to local governments to do. So it's one of their inherent powers is to run a jail. In that instance, arguably the private entity acting on behalf of the public entity could be subject to the Sunshine Law. But again, ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't matter. You're a governmental body. You're bound by the Sunshine Law and public records. So the opinion has very little weight, precedential value, or binding effect upon Holiday Park. Do we need to set up a Sunshine Law police to check on board meetings, board members talking amongst themselves? Well, the answer is no. I mean, you know, that becomes a whole separate issue. I mean, listen, everyone here takes an oath. And you know, the oath implies you're going to comply with the law. Okay? If two or more board members of the same board are sitting in private discussing board business, you know, outside of the realm of the public and without notice, that's a violation of the Sunshine Law, okay? Now, so what happens? Well, someone's going to have to witness that, and someone's going to have to file a complaint. It'll either be through the FDLE or the State Attorney's Office, because there are criminal ramifications for violating the Sunshine Law. There are also potential civil ramifications for violating the Sunshine Law, as well as anything done in violation of the Sunshine Law is void. So any act taken in violation of the Sunshine Law is unenforceable. You can't do it. So it's always my recommendation. If two or more members want to sit down and in a social setting and talk about fishing, that's fine. Not a problem. Two or more board members want to sit down in private and talk about the upcoming meeting and, you know, the vote on spending money to pave the parking lot, big no-no. Can't do it. The only way you can do that is to have a public meeting with notice and an agenda concerning that topic, okay? So I always err on the side of caution when I advise local governments concerning Sunshine Law, all right? If you're gonna sit down in private and talk about anything relating to district business, don't do it. Do not do it. That's, you know, it's a problem. How do you police that? Very hard to do, okay, candidly. Unless one of the two participants wants to turn themselves in, you know, it's not gonna happen, okay? If there's a third party witness and that person wants to come forward and complain, okay. There may also be ethical violations under, you know, the Florida ethics law with doing that. You know, not fulfilling your obligations or you know, breaching your fiduciary duty or duties to the district, as well as, you know, violating your oath. Those were the 14 questions that were given to me, and I may have rushed through them, but I think I've covered them as comprehensively as I can. And board, have any questions?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Sure. Yes, sir.
Did you hear me?
Yes.
I see her. I see.
He'll bang that hammer.
Thank you very much for answering those questions. Yes, now, sir. I'm opening up to the board. Joanne?
Yeah. I'd like to just go back really quickly to. Okay.
You heard me. That's good.
Right.
I didn't get yelled at.
To number two, where asking Holiday Park purchase the abandoned homes in the community. And you said there is a way we can go about it, just like Barefoot Bay did. Does it have to be anything written in the DOR for that?
I would suggest that anything you do, whether it's, you could set up a policy to do that purchase like Barefoot Bay. Barefoot Bay's is a written policy, I do believe.
So you can
do a policy. I would suggest you do a policy. This way it's in writing, in front of your face, and no deviations, because, you know, when you all are gone and someone else is up here and there's no written policy, they may interpret it a different way. Keep it in writing. Can't go wrong.
Right, but a policy is not inserting it into the deed of restrictions, which, if it ever had to be changed, would need a vote
correct
from everybody.
I would suggest
a policy can be changed actually by any new board.
Policies will be adopted by a resolution and can be only adopted by the board at a public meeting with notice and all that good stuff, and it becomes a policy of the board. And yes, the policy can be subsequently changed by a future board or the current board.
And you could do that for us.
I'll do anything you want me to do. That's legal.
Any other questions?
I think I had one more.
Joanne had one more.
Just to be very specific, when it asked about the requirements for a trustee, our biggest thing was, and I believe it's, I just want to make sure that it's not written in here, but you must be a Florida resident.
Well, you'd have to be an elector, so yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's what
correct.
Okay.
Elector of the state of Florida, that
okay
is correct.
That's it.
Keith.
Yes. Basically, on the Sunshine Law, it states that you cannot discuss anything that the board is going to take action on.
Action on, or reasonably could come before the board to take action on.
Yeah.
And as I said, I err on the side of caution just to prevent that gray area. You know, it avoids the appearance of impropriety if you just don't talk about board business. So that's why I'm saying, but you are technically correct.
Okay, this is the situation. Okay, we've if we're going to do the parking lot. Okay, we're not going to discuss the parking lot because we're going to come for a vote. But once it comes up for a vote and it's passed and the parking lot is getting done, can board members say, oh, look, it is a parking lot? Well, we haven't seen this done yet. But, you know, discuss how the situation is going, and if it decides something, is that breaking the sunshine law if you're discussing a project that's already in progress and has already been voted on?
Well, let me expand on that. And would the discussion be that maybe two board members are dissatisfied with how it's going, or is it a situation where they're
just,
not?
Just information, more. Just basically, oh, it's going pretty good, you know.
That's okay. Now, that's okay. But if it's like, you know what, I don't think he's putting the seal coat down properly, you know, we need to address this, that's something the board's going to have to address, okay? So probably should avoid that. But if you're sitting there with one of the others and say, that looks pretty good, yeah, it looks good, done.
So
I'm okay with that.
So basically, if somebody says, well, I don't like the way they're doing this, and you're another board member, you say, bring it up at the board meeting.
Correct.
Bye.
That's, yeah, you're only going to protect yourself doing that, okay?
But if you're saying, hey, it looking like a pretty good job.
Yeah, that looks good. That's it. That's not an issue.
Can I say something?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm the assistant treasurer.
Lucky you, sir.
I can't work with him on the budget because it's going to be voted on.
Tell me. Well, as a broad question, the answer is yes. You cannot work with him as a broad question. Now, if you have a specific question on working on the budget, I mean, you can work on it separately, he can work on it, and cumulatively, the board's going to have to vote on it. But don't sit down with him and say, you know, I think this line item should be $100,000, and he says no, 150. At that point, you're discussing board business, because that budget is going to come back to the board for a vote.
Okay.
Be very careful, especially with the budget. I mean, anything relating to the budget is probably going to be something that's going to come back to the board in the future to vote on.
Okay.
So I would strongly advise against that.
Okay. The second question I have: when board members email someone, isn't that a violation of the Sunshine Law?
Who are they emailing?
Oh, I was emailed several times by a past board member.
Okay. It takes two to tango, okay? First thing is this, that email is a public record and must be given over to the district office.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, absolutely. If it was related,
I still have them on my email. I saved them.
Was it relating to board business?
Yes, it was.
That email is a public record and must be given to your custodian of records, whoever that may be. Okay? And I'll go even further and tell you this, because I've been doing municipal law for 30 years. I represent town of Gran Falcaria, town of Malabar, city of Indian Harbor Beach, and the town of Palm Shores. Former city attorney for the city of West Melbourne, have worked for COCO, and blah, blah, blah. Any communication,
that's what I thought,
which is either in the form of a writing, a text, an email, Facebook, anything along those lines, is a public record relating to board business. If someone tape records, that's a public record, okay? Now, to answer your specific question, if you get an email from a board member, remember, it takes two to tango. If you don't respond, it's not a violation.
I didn't respond.
Don't respond.
I did not vote the way they wanted me to, and they kind of excommunicated me.
Well, whatever. Okay, now secondly, if you respond, that's problematic for you. Your response is also a public record. Now you're implicating yourself. But it is okay for a board member to email every other board member on his position on an item. Do not respond, okay? So if you got an email from Board Member Jones that says, I believe that, you know, we should deny paving the parking lot, do not respond. And don't even respond back and saying, I think we should. Don't do that. Position papers and that would be a position of that one board member. The Attorney General has ruled on this, and there's enough information on this that position papers are okay. Don't respond to them. Now, do you all, Sherry, do you guys get the that Sunshine Law manual? The First Amendment Foundation prints a manual. It's called the Sunshine Law manual is what it's called. The 2019 one is out there. It's the Bible, okay? And my recommendation, maybe too much information is a bad thing, but the board should, the members should have a copy of that. I have a copy of it, okay? And of course, you know, you have to go through that nonsensical ethics training thing, but, you know, they don't necessarily go into detail about the Sunshine Law and public records, okay? That thing has a lot of information in it. Some of it may be confusing, some of it may be self-explanatory, but that can answer a lot of questions for a board member without the necessity of just jumping to the attorney, okay? Now, if you ever, and I don't mean for you to use that as the gospel end all say all, if you still are questioned, then you should direct your question to district manager, who then can ask me the question. But, you know, there's a lot of good information in that book, a lot.
Yes, ma'am.
Just to follow up, I want to be very sure about this. When you said a board member can send an email regarding a position that they hold, does that, what, nobody answers it, but does that email become part of a public record?
Absolutely.
Who turns
Absolutely.
That in? And who turns that in?
Sir?
Who turns that into the office?
If you're the, well, actually, both of you should. The one who sends it and the one who receives it. Okay,
oh.
This way you're both covered, all right? And you only have to keep one record of it at the office level, but, you know, if I receive a public record, or if I send a public record, I should copy it to the district manager or
well,
the custodian of record, whoever that may be.
Well, I saved them.
Well, then good.
I'm going to make a copy of them.
Please do.
Because if they ever try to come back here, I don't think anybody should be told how to vote on anything. They got a mind of their own, and they shouldn't be told how to follow and what to do.
Yeah, regardless of that, ma'am,
yeah.
The fact is that's a record, and it needs
okay.
to be needs to be kept.
Okay.
Getting
and the last question.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Owners would like to own more than one mobile home.
Okay.
Now, we have a problem. It was voted in the DOR that they could only own one. Well, because of some company trying to come in here. But what they're doing now, the realtors are bringing, they're buying these mobile homes, renting them to anybody they want, and the company we were trying to keep out of here is buying them through a realtor. It would be better. And these homes that are being sold, they rent them to anybody. It would be better, like say if I wanted to buy one, an extra one, I would take care of it. The owner's here, and you can do something to try to make them keep it in repair. Because there are big problems on people renting them out and not keeping them up to date.
And
it would have to be changed through the DOR?
Your ownership limitations are contained in the DOR and would have to be changed by the DOR.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. You know.
Pardon?
One
is in there. It, well, so
it says, right. It,
it
does say one right now.
It.
Yes, sir.
So for an LLC or corporation or partnership?
One. And I defined.
Yeah, one for LLC, corporation, partnership, trust. One.
That is correct.
So if a trust could have like 10 people on the trust, you know, the whole family, so the trust would be the 10 people.
The trust would be the identified name of the trust, the, you know, the ABC Land Trust. So
right.
that ABC Land Trust can own one. But
right.
So it owns one, but one of the individual trustees could own one. And
okay.
You know, yeah, yeah, not
it's
much.
But not the original, the executor of the trust can only own. That's his one,
that's
the trust.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Yes, sir.
All right. That's how I understand it.
Yes, sir.
It would have to be changed by the DOR.
I have some more questions for you. Under the number one, I believe that the city of Palm Bay took the properties under, it's called enchantment?
SG.
Now, when I read over the code section, it says there's a 10-year holding period. Now, is that started or is that done? Is that done already when they took them? A 10-year holding period from the time that these properties or asset are liquidated, they have to hold them in escrow.
Well,
is that correct?
What statute are you referring to?
I believe it was the, my wife looked it up. Remember the statute, honey? It's under enchantment.
Well,
that statute. All right. I think it was 220.
Chapter 197.
Yeah, I know. I wrote that down.
That's the statute that deals with how this process works. So my opinion is that the 197 process, which is more specific, will take, you know, priority over any other general statute about it.
Escheatment. Okay. I guess
yeah.
It's weird.
There's a general escheat statute.
Yeah.
Talks about kind of abandoned properties. Which
they are.
Well, but the tax certificate is what links this escheat to this process.
Correct.
So.
So the 10-year statute.
I don't think it's the 10-year statute. And you know, I know Barefoot Bay. What they do is, they go through similar process, but they're not in an incorporated municipality. They're in the county. So, after 3 years that a certificate is not bought, the county gets title. Okay, and under the statute, in our case, the next step would be. Then the county says, we don't want these things. We're giving it to the incorporated municipality, Palm Bay. But in Barefoot Bay's situation, they're in the county. They have approached the county and got some of those properties back. So I do not believe it's a 10-year process. I believe it's significantly less than that. Because, I mean, maybe Sherry can help me out. Some of the properties that Palm Bay has, how old are the taxes on those, do you know?
Several years.
Not more than 10.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So I do believe that the process in 197, which is a more specific process, is going to be applicable as opposed to that 10-year general escheat statute.
Right. That they, because it says it has, there's a holding period of the 10 years. So I'm just thinking that these places are going to be sitting over there another 7 years.
No, but I think the holding period here in the statute is 3 in 197.
So you're saying that outperforms the 220 statute, which I believe.
In my opinion, yes, because that's the process for this escheat under 197 is linked to the tax certificate. Escheating of the property under the 10-year statute is not linked to the 197 tax certificate process.
So you think that, you know, Mr. Jones can't come forward 9 years in and say, you know, they sold this property, I want to collect my money. Because it's mute on, like, the money that was previously owed. Doesn't say anything about, oh, you're owed 40 grand. So I want that 20 grand that you sold it for.
Once that deed is issued to the county, all prior obligations, including ownership,
gone.
Gone.
So up comes Mr. Jones, you know, first cousin. They sold it for 20,000. There's no liens on the property. So my point is, can he get the 20,000?
No, the 20,000 goes to the current owner under that tax deed, whether it's the county, the city, or us, if we can get the process going. No, they're gone.
Okay, so we don't have to worry about
no. That. And let me take it another step. Let's assume a tax certificate is bought. After 2 years, you bought a certificate in 2017. 2 years later,
nobody pays you what you got into it, including interest. You can apply for a tax deed from the tax collector. They issue you a tax deed. Any prior mortgage, any prior ownership, any prior non-governmental lien, any other encumbrance, gone. You own it free and clear. Now, the code liens may still be an issue in the scenario I gave you, but mortgage is gone. All that's gone. You got it. It's yours.
Are you done?
No, I'm not done. On the tax issue, now, we issue the taxes in the amounts for the park. Let's say it's $2,100 for that, and I know the other things, trash collection and all that's different. I understand how that works. And a tax for the home. Now, the way I understand it is that's our money, us, because we're a special district. If we wanted to collect the taxes and the whole thing ourselves, we would get 100% and not, if we were doing it that way.
Of your tax, your line item.
Yeah, our tax and the tax on the homes. I don't think that the city of Palm Bay gets any tax. I mean, we pay them to do it.
No,
$28,000, I believe. I, this is the way I'm seeing it. Am I seeing it incorrectly?
Here's what happens. You got a tax bill. Let's assume you got a tax bill. The tax collector sends out a bill, and it's $5,000, okay? Above line are ad valorem taxes, school, county, okay?
Right.
All those line items, if the tax is paid, go to them. Everything below the line item, mosquito control district, garbage, you know, Holiday Park, your particular line item goes to you. You don't get the whole $5,000. Yes, okay?
So
that's if you do it that way. And yes, there's a charge for the various governmental agencies to process this for you.
Get that.
Okay? So
the question I have is, can we, as the special district, say that $15,000 owed to us, can we just do what they do, just wipe it out for us and buy the property? Like they do, exactly what they're doing. They're wiping everything out. Why can't we do that as a special district?
Not under the scenario you have right now with the other entity collecting the taxes. If you wanted to administer the taxes yourself,
then we could do it.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know. I'm just
sure. I mean, you know, the answer is in theory, yes, you can.
You got more?
One more.
Okay.
On the Holiday Park police. Now, when I read the Sunshine Law, when I read it over, not only can the board be held liable for Sunshine Law violations, also everybody out there, including people in the office. Anyone that's influencing the board in any way, this is why the way I read it. In other words, you get a phone call from X or you get a visited from X, and he influenced your vote, anybody on this board, that's a violation also.
Here's I think what you're referring to. It's called the conduit theory, okay? Board member Smith, board member Jones, use a resident to communicate between the three of you.
Exactly.
That's a violation. That's called using the third party as a conduit.
Yeah,
okay.
But we might have that.
Now, because the third party is not a governmental officer, they're not liable, but you two are, because you're the government officials.
Well, that's what I'm concerned about.
Well, yeah, so, you know, don't use a conduit. There should be a memo in your files somewhere of a Sunshine Law and a public records law memo that I did a few years ago. And maybe I just need to update it and send it to you. Okay, let me tell you what, it's certainly a Reader's Digest version of that book, but it discusses the basics that you all need to worry about, okay? I'll make a note to Sunshine Law memo.
Who came up with this law?
I know,
really.
It is.
Good
it is
God.
A pain, yes.
The Florida Constitution.
You know, the only reason I could think that somebody would do this law is because they thought we were too stupid to handle our own affairs.
No, well, no, the it's in the Florida Constitution about you know, public bodies, but here's the theory, okay? What it did, what the evil it's supposed to prevent is the backroom negotiations.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And that's why they did it.
Yeah. Okay, anyway.
I don't think they
thought
you were
stupid. Sorry about spouting off, but I had it to do. Okay, we finished up here. We need to get to the residents. So, this gentleman right back here in the corner, come right on up, please.
Just have him line up. So
yeah. Line up if you would like to. We'll take
line
you one
up,
at a time.
They're all going to line up, aren't they? Better not.
I'm glad we had the conversation here because you've already answered some questions I was going to ask. My name's Colin Fleet, 1150 Seminole Court, Northeast, Palm Bay, Florida, 32907. From what I understand, if tax certificates are not paid, that property can go to the city of Palm Bay after 3 years.
It first goes to the county.
Okay.
Yeah, but the answer to your question is it eventually goes to the city of Palm Bay,
okay.
Correct.
So at what point, like if a house is in good condition, obviously people are going to pay the taxes, and they're going to look after it. Those aren't the ones we're worried about. So after 3 years, it goes to the city.
Okay.
Then what?
This, as I said before, even though the city's not responsible for taxes, the city now becomes responsible for the maintenance of that property.
Okay, so if the city's responsible for the maintenance of that house and it's filled with rats and it's shot to hell,
we start sending out the fine notices to the city.
Has that happened? Has that ever happened?
I don't know.
Okay, so we know now.
And remember, the restated declaration, even though it's been around for a while, it's a fairly new thing, so I don't know, you know, where it's at. And here's the thing, you know, the dynamics are this. In my opinion, the city doesn't want these places. They don't want them. For the maintenance responsibility, they don't want them. I think we can negotiate with the city to get these things back. Okay.
We don't want them.
Well, yeah, you do.
We don't want them. If the city's taking it and it's filled with rats, let them take it out.
Well, but, and that'll be a decision for you all to make, but if we get it back, clean it up, we can sell them, make money on it.
Well, not if they've been shot to hell.
Well,
and that's the case.
And I think Sheree is working on mechanisms to move that process through. I mean, we're at the infancy stage of trying to negotiate with Palm Bay, but there may be available remedies for us with regard to that tearing down that home.
So right. It would be a choice between Holiday Park trustees, whether the house is worth saving or not. That's what they're here for.
That's what they're here for.
Okay. Yes. My question's answered. I got another one.
It's true.
No. Okay. I think it was 2 years ago when our board got together and discussed that you could only own one home at Holiday Park.
Okay.
Was that legal?
Sure.
If it was just the board that dictated it?
No. That was part of the amended and restated DORs that were voted on by the residents.
Okay, so my next question is, do you think the board is going to reverse it? Okay. Has to be brought up at a board meeting.
No, you're okay there, but remember, the board can suggest it. It's up to you all to amend the DOR to change that.
All of us?
Well,
which is the board?
Whatever. No. The board cannot on its own amend the DORs.
He has to put in the amendment. Yeah.
Somebody has to propose it, and the board say, "Yeah, we're going to bring that in a referendum vote to the members."
How many people here would amend it?
It doesn't go that way. I mean, to make a change to the DOR, It's a huge process, which can be done, and we've done it twice now since in 20 years that I'm here. And it involves a mass mailing to every resident, whether they're here or wherever. We take that has to come back. It has to be, and it has to be, the count has to be viewed by outside people. It's a huge process, but it can be done.
But did you do that with all the residents before you passed it first time?
We don't pass it. You all pass it. It's passed by the 700 residents.
There were ballots sent
out. Okay.
What we would do is take, you know, ask for a vote. Do you want
ever remember receiving a ballot whether we could only own one house or not.
Yes.
Maybe it's because I'm from Canada and
okay,
they didn't bother.
Okay, we can't all speak at one time.
Or maybe it was done
in
the winter when nobody was, in the summer when nobody was here.
No, it really does. It goes to all residents. The Canadians get it, and we are respectful of the.
All right.
Okay, I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. This is not a hammer.
Okay.
One other thing.
Let's not all speak at one time. If you have something to say, come to the
microphone. Just a quick thing. When the letters do go to Canada, we are respectful of the idea that it takes longer to get there and longer to get the reply. So it's done in ample time for everyone to have their say in whether you want to make that change and what it would be.
Well, why don't you do that in the winter? When everybody's here? Hello. Okay.
Yeah.
Come on.
We did do it so that those who were here were handed, and those that weren't were mailed.
Somebody's
and that
gotta
was
start
years
it.
Ago, and we can do you can do it again.
Okay, I have one more question.
It takes.
Wait a minute.
It takes.
How much is the cable TV in the fees that we pay?
How much are we paying?
We pay about.
Could you let me know?
We pay about $18,000 a month.
$17,000.
$18 a month. Okay, thank you.
$17,000 a month we pay to Spectrum.
Thank you.
I just want to say one more thing in addition to what Carl touched on with the homes that the City of Palm Bay owns. It is in the infancy stage. They have approached us until I get more information. I don't feel that this is something that I need. I mean, I want everybody to know what's going on, but it is in the infancy stages until I get all the facts. And when I do, it will be submitted to the board and voted on if it even comes to a vote. But we are negotiating, and I'm pretty positive regarding the outcome. So that's where we are there. But I can assure you that it's very proactive.
Thank you. Next.
Hi, Bob Shear, 382 Holiday Park. I only have one question, but I'm going to clarify one thing that's driving me nuts here. This three-year thing, okay? What people need to understand is the 3 years is if no one buys a tax certificate, you need 2 years without paying your tax certificate or no taxes paid. The third year, then you can put the place up for sale. Where the problem arises in this park is these homes that you're looking at that are abandoned. If the tax certificate is paid for by Joe Blow, I don't care who it is, then there are no taxes owed on that property. So you cannot go after that property. And understand something, that tax certificate pays Holiday Park their money, therefore we are not owed. Tax certificates are only good for 7 years. On the eighth year, number one, losers their money and it starts over. That could go on for 100 years, okay? So you need to figure out how you're going to circumvent that situation that this county has created. Now my question is, I want to go back to the question that was brought up about special districts and the Sunshine Law. I've listened to everybody out here, I listened to everybody up here talk about what a problem the Sunshine Law is. And I agree with you. Is it an easy process if this park were ever to decide they don't want to be a special district? Which, by the way, special districts have decreased drastically over 10 years because The state of Florida no longer wants them, and they're trying to eliminate them like crazy. Do your research on it. I have. By the way, just one other point on that. Where you have to abide by the Sunshine Law, your congressmen, your senators, all those people who passed this law do not have to abide by the Sunshine Law.
Correct.
They could go in there and someone could give them insider information on a stock and go out that next day and buy that stock, and it is not illegal. So they have imposed something on us that is terrible. In the realm of this park, in 1981, 83, we made a referendum. We bought this property with a mortgage, okay? In 1988, 89, we changed it from a park that everybody could live here to a 55 and older park. Yes, it takes some work. Palm Bay and Brevard County both do not want us to be a special district, okay? I don't know if it's the best idea. What I am proposing to you and to this board is it's something we should at least investigate to lessen the responsibility of these people and allow 80% of the people to sit in this position and help us govern this park and play a role. Think about that, Carl. When you put it into that perspective, don't go in with the blinders. That's all I'm asking.
Thank you. Bruce.
Bruce Crabb, 442 Neighborly Court. A couple of just to help the board out. Pat Gleason in the Attorney General's office wrote a very simple, maybe 20-page document of the Sunshine Law. The office has it. I sent it to Lori last week. Rather than buying that book that you can't understand, take her thing, which is very nice, right, Carl? Send it to all the board members. It's a PDF. I gave it to you. I sent it to you, Lori. Don't waste money buying that book because you can't understand it. And the second question is, there's been a lot of questions about treasurer and assistant treasurer working together. When they are in the, they should be allowed to be in the office to sign checks together because those items are already passed by the board. Am I correct?
If they're in the,
in order to sign the check, okay. They're already passed.
If they're in there just signing checks, then yes, they can be together. If they
are discussing.
If they go, right. Well, I don't think this is appropriate. I think it needs to go back to the board kind of thing. You know, fine line there. But if they're just signing checks,
well,
you all approve.
Because they've been told they can't sign checks together, which I think is stupid.
I think, you know, and I say this tongue-in-cheek, if they're in there silently signing checks, not a problem.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I feel.
Yeah.
And oh, quick question on the houses and the buying houses and all this. The board must remember we have vacant lots in this park from the 2004 hurricanes, most of which we're not collecting our assessments on. Now, Brevard County took off. They're actually pushing the auctions now and the deed sales. That's how we got this last 9 houses that were given to the city of Palm Bay. Now there's a question of what they're going to do with them, and they're all running around in circles. Some of the people on the board want to buy them and demolish the homes, whatever, whatever. All we're going to have is a vacant lot sitting there like we got 10 or 12 already in the park. Palm Bay tried to sell the first 2 they had, and they didn't sell. One over here on Blossom because they wanted $45,000 or $50,000 for it. My suggestion to the office was contact the city of Palm Bay. It's zero expense to them. Sell it for $10,000. Am I crazy?
No. I don't know you very well enough to say that. I don't know. But as Cherie just said, that process has been started. Okay.
Right.
So and I don't want to give too much hope, but I think she's having good discussions with Palm Bay right now.
She is. Excellent. And I appreciate that. A number of years ago, we bought 2 houses in here. Both of them have been disasters. The first one was over on Holiday Park, that empty lot that's sitting over there. We paid $25,500 for that house and lot. We paid $4,500 or $4,900 to demolish it. We kept it for 3 years, lost our assessments, they're $6,000. We paid lawyers, we paid whatever not. We took out the driveway and put grass in there. And we did a great thing. We sold it for $18,500. That's how good that deal was. And the second house was the Wolf property over here, which Mr. Gaston now owns. That was supposed to have been deeded to the park for zero and all this kind of stuff. It fell in the cracks, and I got stuck in the office finishing it. And I think we lost most of the $10,000 we ever got on it.
Bruce, so I can assure you that these homes that we're talking about with the city of Palm Bay, they will absolutely have clear title, no utilities, nothing.
No, I understand.
Nothing.
I mean, have done the work.
This is every T and every I is going to be dotted.
I have done the work on the deed restrictions since 2014. Yeah. Okay. I've sent the board the information on how the deed restrictions were done. Yes, when the tax deed sale is done, everything is zero. All the expenses are gone. But now we got the city of Palm Bay owning them, and they're wrestling with how they're going to do their decision. I hope they can work it out. That's my opinion. I hope.
Thank you. And let's have no further discussion of that subject until we get the doggone paperwork done, put together, and have something to present us. Okay?
Becky Ernest, 205 Burrell Circle. Hopefully mine is a very easy question. Does the city have to abide by our deed of restrictions as far as only being able to sell one property to one person?
No.
No. The city can sell all of them to one owner?
You asked if the city can own
no.
them.
No, okay, I spoke wrong.
Okay, the city can own them because under our definition of entity in the DORs, we don't have in there a governmental body. And we did that for a reason possibly such as this. Now, can the city sell them to all nine to one person? No, not under our DOR.
Thank you.
Okay, are there any more questions?
What, more? I'm getting hungry. Oh, she looks angry.
Molly Stone, 1157 Greenview. One question I didn't hear asked or answered is, is the city of Palm Bay exempt from following our DORs? Because we have a rule as to how soon places need to be removed and the property restored.
The answer is no, they're not exempt.
Okay. They're not exempt, so they have to be following our...
Correct. The only thing they're exempt
so
from...
So these properties all need to be removed, the places need to be removed, and the properties restored.
Yeah, and you know, why certainly if the negotiations with Palm Bay fall apart, yes, then we'll proceed. But right now, some decent preliminary discussions have been had by Sherry and the city of Palm Bay, and it's looking like things might be moving forward on the transition of ownership. You know, don't want to, pardon the expression, piss them off too much, you know what I'm saying? So, but
we don't want to, we shouldn't be letting it go on and on because...
And I don't believe she's going to do that. I mean, you know, you got a new manager here, you know, going to do things. We know what happened with somebody before, and we won't go into that. But so the answer to your question is if we can't do a deal with Palm Bay, then the city of Palm Bay is responsible for complying with the DORs, except they don't have to pay the taxes.
Another question, exactly how many does the city of Palm Bay own?
Right now we're negotiating with a seven. Also, with this negotiation, we're also considering some grant money. So we may be eligible to acquire a substantial amount of money in order to remove the homes that are uninhabitable or that cannot be repaired. So it's again, in its infancy stage. So there's a lot of good things happening, and unfortunately, this is bureaucracy, so it's going to take some time. But the money is out there to get them removed.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you.
Gary Valentine, 1057 Maple Court. In reference to Bruce's comment that we lost $10,000 on the Wolf property, that 10,000 divided by 700 homes cost us $14.28. My property value went up a whole lot more than the $10,000.
Thank you.
Jean Beach, 1090 Moonlight Court. You mentioned about one of the questions was about investments. Can the district invest in, can they put their money in something other than checking account or a savings account? There is and we currently do have some money under SBA, which, are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
SBA, to me, said Small Business Administration, but it isn't that. And I can't, off the top of my head, remember what that SBA is, but it's an investment vehicle under the state of Florida. Keith, are you familiar with that?
I rattled off four types of investments that can be, and if this qualifies as one of them, then it's perfectly legit. And okay, so it appears it qualifies.
Uh-huh, this is like an investment group that is run by the state of Florida, and I believe that the treasurer of the state, and there are other officials that are on that board. And so and years ago we had a considerable amount of money in there. I think now we only have like under 30,000. Is it? Under 30,000 in that account, but so the question, I just wanted to be sure that is still under that.
And we're redoing a lot with the, we got the loans paid off, we got things done, so we're doing some reorganizations on the budget, and we're going to
put it in there,
or put restricted funds, do something, yeah.
Uh-huh. And that investment, that's a guarantee under the state of Florida.
It's still only paying about 2.2%.
Yeah, I don't know what it's paying, but.
Thank you. Becky.
I don't know what you're saying.
Becky Uranus, 205 Burrell Circle. Is there anything that we can do as far as enforcing our the laws about feeding wild animals? Any wild animal?
Well, I think those are listed under the, actually they're not listed under, you're talking wild animals.
What are we talking about?
The raccoons, the cats.
Well, listen, there's specific Florida statutes concerning the feeding of wildlife, okay? And in my opinion, the state of Florida has preempted local jurisdictions from regulating that by enacting that statute. It did not give local jurisdictions the right to make more stricter rules. So if somebody's violating the statute, you know, I say this tongue in cheek, you call the sheriff's department, you'll never see them, okay? So, but the answer to your question is, there's probably not a whole heck of a lot we can do. In that respect, I mean, because we're a governmental body, I believe the state has preempted us from controlling wildlife, because the control of wildlife is specifically within the purview of the state, not the local jurisdictions.
So they can go ahead and feed all the wild animals they want.
I think it's against
the
law.
We can't do nothing about it, but it is probably a state violation. Might want to call animal control, see if they'll take it. But I honestly say this through experience. You might see the sheriff in 3 years if you make a complaint.
Okay.
But don't give up on that, Becky. I think we're going to go in that direction. All right. Is there any more questions? Seeing none. Mr. Bone, thank you so much for attending and answering these questions.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
All right. Can I hang?
I have just a couple of things. So it's in the record. I failed to note that Lori Lyons, the administrative assistant, is also going to be present. Also, I wanted to make a correction. Well, I have to just correct it for the minutes. At the reorganizational meeting, two of the trustees that stood up and took the oath of office did not have to because their term wasn't up. So I want to be very specific about the terms. The terms that were up were those for the seats numbered 1, 3, 5, 7, 9. Their term is up by our bylaws at the end of the calendar year that is an odd number. So, Barbara Whitnick is seat 1, she took the oath. Jack Emmerich, seat 3, he took the oath. Terry Steimer is seat 5, he was not here but took the oath today. Joanne Gagan is seat 7, I took the oath. The seat that is not occupied and empty is seat number 9. If anyone wishes to apply for that, that term will end in 2021. So those have even numbered. Joe Prisco is 2, Gaston Peltier is seat number 4, Michael Hamm, seat number 6, and Keith Richards, seat number 8. Their term is up at the end of this calendar year. That's just to make it correct.
We good? Okay. Can I hear a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We're adjourned. I need a gun in there. Oh, here it is. Hammer.